As the silent seconds dance in their eternity about me and set aflame again the fire to inspire my nimble fingers to procure the pen and awaken it in a resurrection, transforming the ink to the blood of the writer. As once again he bleeds his acquired wisdom like a light into the world.
Good morning.
Good morning, Cabro and the Big Chill. That was me. That was me twice.
That was you on the previous recording.
I forgot to bring in the recording that we normally play, so we took it right off Simeon, and that was a little switch there. It was an echo before the real.
It's live radio with recorded radio.
That's right. And in case you folks out there are wondering, this is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else on WCOM 103.5 FM. I'm here with the one and only John Paul McClellan as my co-host.
Good morning.
And I am yours truly, Claudio. And most people don't say it that way. They say Claudio over here.
Claudio. Claudio's here,
must
y'all.
Must be that southern thing.
It's Claudio.
It's Claudio
Niedvarock, for those of you who'd like to know.
That's right.
It's Claudio Oswald Niedvarock.
That's something I almost never tell people.
Don't tell anybody that.
Just go for Claudio.
It's a confusing thing.
Anyway, we've got a bit of a blast happening here today. I'm hoping this thing works out. We're doing another telephone interview, and this time with Jamie Foxx, who is the lead guitarist, electric guitarist for Jen Chapin, whose music we're actually going to start off with here in a moment. And he also at one time played with Blood, Sweat and Tears. First album I ever owned was Blood, Sweat and Tears.
One of the few I ever owned.
Yeah, right.
I never used to buy music, but that's one I did buy.
And now we don't have to. We can just get it.
That's right.
And then, of course, I'm also going to play a cut from his album, which is called When I Get Home, where he takes the electrical guitar into a bit of a jazz direction. And I think he also has the husband of Jen Chapin doing bass on it, Stefan.
Very good.
So I think we'll just start off with a little Jen Chapin and the title of this particular piece on her album called Light of Mine. The title of this tune coming up is American Skin.
American Skin by Jen Chapin.
And you'll hear Jamie in the background playing that guitar.
Let's see what we get here. Is it a night?
That was the sexy, sultry, sensuous Jen Chapin with American Skin. I believe that was written by Bruce Springsteen.
Is that right?
I certainly like her number better than I like his.
Well, I thought that was a very interesting cut. You had the extremely highly contrasting texture of the acoustic guitar on one side of the stereo image, and the electric is
interesting.
Got like a blast out tone quality, but a very subdued sort of rift.
Great musical drama. Anyway, so that was Jen Chapin once again. We interviewed her here not too long ago, and I thought she'd be a good segue to interviewing Jamie Foxx, since he is among her musicians. And he is going to be calling in, I think, around 10 past, so we better get on with whatever we're playing.
So it won't be long now. It's 9 after now.
I'm hoping the cell phone call works. We haven't done a cell phone before. We've done strictly landline, but we'll give it a shot. Hopefully you're not traveling under any bridges.
Shouldn't be that big a deal if he's not roving around in his car or something.
That's right. So let's go ahead and start him on his cut of his album entitled When I Get Home. And the cut we're playing, and we may have to fade out on once he calls, is 5 1/2.
5 1/2.
He can explain that.
Okay.
You can say, explain it, Lucy.
And this is Jamie Foxx, yes?
Indeed.
Right. This is Claudio Speakeasy.
Oh, hi, Claudio.
Hello, is this Jamie Foxx?
Hi, it's Jamie. How you
doing?
Hey,
buddy, doing well. How you doing?
I'm fine. I'm glad I got you. I called a minute ago and got an answering machine.
Oh, no, you didn't. Yeah, we noticed that we have an interior light here that flashes when phone calls come in, and it didn't ignite at the time, so I have no idea.
Well, it worked this time. That's
yeah, we good. Got it worked this time. Good second try there.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
This is my co-host, John Paul McClellan.
How you doing, Jamie?
Hi, John.
As you can hear, we're playing one of your cuts here.
Oh, great.
You might want to explain the title to us. What brought about the title 5 1/2?
Oh, 5 1/2 was the height of my girlfriend at the time.
Ah, interesting perspective.
Yeah, who actually kind of a sad story. We were together for quite a while and broke up about a year ago. But yeah, it was also funny because it took. I wrote the song quite a while ago, but it took a few years for her to like it.
Interesting. How come?
Oh, I don't know. You know, just taste or whatever.
Things had to mellow out, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. So it's pretty funny because, like, oh, here's the song I wrote for you. It's just, I don't really like it that much. But
oh, no.
She came around later to appreciate it a little more.
Good. I think it's a wonderful tune.
Oh, thank you.
I've actually played your music while I was doing some of my writing at home, and it's wonderfully relaxing, sort of eases you into whatever you're doing, lets the imagination go free.
Oh, great, great. Good.
And I think John Paul himself is a bit of a jazz artist. He was enjoying it.
Oh, yeah? What do you play, John? John Paul, should I say?
Yes. I play several instruments, and I haven't played professionally for quite a while, but I've always been interested in jazz and have played lots of the old standards over the last 40 years.
And your instruments are guitar, piano.
Yeah, I have a degree in composition and theory, minor in piano. I played guitar since I was a baby. My father played around the house, so I don't remember starting to play the guitar. I first started studying music as a percussionist. Learned to read when I was about seven. Playing percussion, and switched to baritone horn at 12, trombone at 14. I was the student conductor at the high school, and blah, blah, blah. You know, I just did it, all the music stuff all my life, basically.
Right. So you just grew up with music and took it from there.
Yeah.
We've had the pleasure of performing together for many years at this point.
Oh, yeah, many years. Starting in the mid-90s, I really
enjoyed your gig here with Jen Chapin in Apex, which is the only one I managed to see. I don't think you guys made it to Temple because of weather.
No, it was the Sunday of the big storm, so we were actually driving there from let's see, were we in Sanford?
Wilmington, were you, or somewhere out there?
Near Wilmington, and just got a call, and there was kind of a furious debate for a while whether the show's on and off, and, you know, they realized a lot of people weren't going to show up, so they canceled it.
Yeah.
And we just sort of changed our GPS to take us home. We got up to Virginia before the storm stopped us. We had to just stop overnight.
Oh, goodness, so you did have to stop. I was wondering.
Yeah, it got pretty scary on the road there. So we just had a relaxed evening at some.
Good. Where are you calling from now?
From home in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn, all right. I remember Brooklyn quite well. Actually, I lived in Brooklyn Heights.
That's right, you were saying when we were speaking. Mm-hmm.
On the very street that Jen grew up on.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Isn't that strange?
Corner of Hicks and Cranberry, and there was a big plaque dedicated to her father around the corner there.
Yeah.
A block away from the promenade.
Well, I think Brooklyn is one of those places, in New York in general, where there's a lot of sort of so-called coincidences and different, you know, energy streams coming together that you might not expect.
My daughter lived there for a while, and I went up and got her when she was tired of it. It was sometime in the late 90s. She lived, you know, you come over that bridge, and right there, there's a turnoff. It's, what is it, Kingsland?
It may be. I can't remember all the names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. I liked it. It was a nice area.
Well, yeah, there. I mean, the people who don't know Brooklyn may not realize that there are some really beautiful neighborhoods. And
I didn't know
that when I moved to New York from California. So much I thought Brooklyn looked kind of, you know, not so attractive to me. But once you see the different neighborhoods and so forth, there's a lot. Got a lot going for it.
Yes, indeed.
I just want to give a quick plug. Pardon me for doing this while I have you on the phone, but just want to give a quick plug to our sponsors, underwriters, the Carolina Theater of Durham, who's got the Full Frame Festival going on Thursday through Sunday this week, as well as Studio in the Woods with John Demers. Just thanks for your support, and just wanted to give you a plug. Let us know what's going on at some point, John. Anyway, back to you. I want to dig into your life a bit. I'm going to leave it to you as to where you'd like to start. And then you can always tell me how you met Jen. And I'm certainly curious about your link with Blood, Sweat, and Tears as well, as you know.
I was born in a small town in Bethlehem.
We're not talking to you.
No, exactly. There were some donkeys around.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I can sort of deal with the blood, sweat, and tears thing pretty easily.
All right.
I moved to New York in 1996. I had lived in California all my life up until then, and primarily, well, I grew up in Los Angeles, and then I lived in San Francisco for quite a while. And came to a certain point where I realized that to pursue my musical interest, that New York was the place to go. So my 5 foot one and a half girlfriend and I picked up and moved to New York. So it was just it was through a guitar player friend of mine who I knew who was performing with Blood, Sweat, and Tears in those days, and he did it for several years, and then he quit or something happened, and another friend of mine, a saxophonist who I had met in San Francisco, who moved to New York, just gave me a call one day and said, "Hey, you know, there's an opening if you're interested."
Hmm.
So you know, this was about, I don't know, around 99, 2000, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was long past the days of, you know, the famous recordings. And
sure,
so forth.
I understand.
We were playing that music, and it was with David Clayton Thomas singing, and always a great band of really, really great New York musicians, and four horn section, and doing all that music was really, really fun.
How long did you do it?
I did it for a couple years. I did it for a few years.
So you actually toured with him?
Yeah, the touring was primarily on the weekends, like a couple days at a time, and it was interesting. It was a little, sometimes it got a little Spinal Tap-ish in terms of some of the places we played. We played at a lot of casinos, and I think the one that reminded me of the movie is we flew out to California and played in a huge hangar on an Air Force or Marine base, San Diego. I mean, the thing was like just miles long. You know, you can imagine the acoustic environment.
Oh man,
for music, and there were jets taking off right outside.
Must have been horrible acoustics.
You know, but there's that part in Spinal Tap where they're playing on the military base and the officer, you know, showing them around. So that reminded me of that a little bit. We would do some crazy things like. For that gig, we flew out the day of the gig, did the gig, and took the red eye back the same day.
Wow.
So it was pretty challenging in terms of the hours. Just I think because the band was so big, they liked to take the first plane available. So you'd have to meet at the airport like for the 6:30 a.m. plane or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So they're actually living up to their name, Blood, Sweat, and Tears. They actually toiled for their gigs.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I bet that's a large group then. Yeah,
it was a good experience. I mean, I would say in the original recordings that as far as guitar goes, it really wasn't particularly prominent.
That's true.
It was mostly the horn arrangements and so forth. There were always chances to play and, you know, get a few solos here and there. And it was a good experience.
No doubt.
So, yeah. So that was that, and as far as Jen goes, there's a little bit more complex history to that. After I moved to New York, I got a gig playing with a jazz singer down in Soho, and you know, when I moved here, I had thought about coming to New York when I was quite a bit younger, and I was actually here for a little bit in the early 80s after playing with an organist named Brother Jack McDuff, who was a jazz organ player.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about moving here then, but it was just a little, for me, you know, sort of a California boy and everything, and New York in those days was not the sort of warm and friendly place that it is now. So I just kind of, I really couldn't deal with it at the time, so I went back to California.
So California was a much friendlier place in that regard?
Well, yeah, and that was what I knew.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Sure.
So just New York, I mean, it takes a while to sort of really get the feel of the place, so things can be kind of intimidating and daunting, and that later on you just go, okay, just kind of accept it.
Yeah,
the
I know.
Environment, you know?
The interesting thing that I can add very quickly about New York City, having lived and running I ran a bar on 106 and Broadway called the Blue Star. I was an art manager. It is definitely the only thing I can say, it qualifies as another planet. But it is the only place in my life where being an artist was the end thing, where being an artist was normal. If you weren't an artist, they looked at you funny.
Yeah. There's certainly a lot of creative energy here. In a way, it's actually a very normal place, too, because New York really breaks down into, like, lots of little neighborhoods.
I can imagine, yeah.
You know, so you don't... Well, I never lived, you know, in Midtown or anything, but basically you it's like a lot of little small towns that sort of connect into one big town.
Yeah, that's right.
But, so I moved to New York, and I came from a different route because I came when I was in my 40s, and, you know, a lot of musicians move here out of music school. They all went to Berklee School of Music or something together. They have their little groups of acquaintance, and, you know, that develops as time goes on. So I came as, like, really an outsider, and I didn't know many musicians. I might have known one or two people. I just sort of took a leap of faith and decided to give it a try. So I asked all the people I knew in California if they had phone numbers of people, you know, that I could call. So when I got here, that was part of what I did, was like call lots of musicians. And there was this one woman who was a singer, and I gave her a call. And, you know, some people would call you back. A lot of people wouldn't. You know, couldn't be bothered, but it's totally understandable with people's busy lives here. But anyway, this one singer... who I left a message, and I happened to mention that I had been in the Thelonious Monk jazz competition.
Right.
Because I think it was 95, they have it for a different instrument each year, and that year they split it up between guitar and bass. And I hadn't been here too long, and some friends of mine were saying, oh, are you going to enter the monk competition? I go, oh, is that happening? Well, okay, sure. You know, you had to make an audition tape with very specific things to do, you know, play this kind of song and do that, and, you know, play chords like Freddie Green and et cetera, et cetera. So I made the tape, and I ended up being picked for a semifinalist.
Fantastic.
So that was great, you know, and I went down to D.C. for the competition and ultimately didn't get in the final. There were three finalists, so I didn't get to that stage, but it was pretty interesting. And the judges for the competition were Jim Hall, Pat Metheny, John Scofield, and Pat Martino.
Holy mackerel.
You know, the greatest guitar players around, so it was like no pressure or anything.
I chauffeured Pat Metheny around for the Carolina Theater not too long ago.
Oh, yeah, what an amazing musician.
Yes, yes.
So I had done that, you know, and I mentioned it in my message to this woman, and later she told me that's why she called me back, because I, you know, it's like, okay, well, good, at least I had something
right
to drop. So I was playing with her and her husband, who played saxophone, and I met Stefan Crump, the bassist, who's now and has been for quite a while Jen's husband.
Indeed.
On that gig. And the gig was kind of funny, because the singer and her husband used to have pretty serious arguments while we were playing. And he actually had a pretty bad temper and even walked off the gig in the middle of a song.
Oh, boy. Oh, my God.
You know, while playing a gig.
We won't mention any names, I suppose.
No. I mean, that's right. You know, I liked him and everything.
Right, I understand.
He had anger management issues.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, in the midst of this emotional kind of turmoil, Stefan and I really bonded in a nice way, musically and personally. So we started playing together.
Yeah, you guys have a good energy on stage together. When I came to see you, you know.
Yeah, and it's really been, I mean, it's been over 10 years now. Maybe, I don't know, I lose track of time. But we really have a great connection. And he's an incredible musician, really.
I like the way he drifts off into all of those expressionisms while he's playing eyes shut and just feeling those strings and chords.
He's a very visual musician as
he
well,
is.
Which people really get a kick out of.
Very much so. Let me just remind the public that you're listening to Claudio Speakeasy, The Literary and All Else, on WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carborough. And I'm in the studio here with John Paul. And we have Jamie Foxx, musician, guitarist, I should say, electric guitarist, And we just played a cut of his album early on, which is entitled When I Get Home, and we actually have him on the telephone calling us from Brooklyn. Back to you, Jamie.
Yeah, so just back to this labyrinthian tale. So Stefan and I, you know, really connected musically, and then I did a bunch of trio gigs, some at that same place. It was called Cave House that was in Soho for a while, and then moved before they eventually went out of business. Like, wow. Unfortunately, many music places come and go here.
Especially in the city, yeah.
We had a great time playing together, and then I remember meeting Jen on one of those gigs, which was right around the time that she and Stefan started dating.
So, oh, I
anyway.
See. Okay, so you met them pre-marriage.
Yeah, exactly. So I knew Stefan before he had met Jen. So she used to come to our gigs, and you know, after a while, she had a band that she'd been playing with for quite a while with, you know, more great musicians, but she wanted to take a different turn musically. And I think her group at the time was a kind of, it was basically fairly kind of loud and kind of aggressively funky.
Sort of in a new wave direction, or is that overestimated?
Not so much that, but just like, you know, just dynamically, like at a very kind of, loud volume and so forth.
Like Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
yeah, in a way.
Boosted up a little.
So I think she wanted to go for a little more subtlety and maybe dynamic range and so forth. So
she certainly got that now.
Yeah. So she put together a group, and fortunately for me, she asked me if I'd like to play guitar, and of course I did. And for a while we were playing with a larger group with a piano, mostly electric piano, great pianist named Pete Rendy, who's here in Brooklyn, and drums. And occasionally saxophone. Chris Cheek, who's a great sax player here, would often be on gigs and some recordings with us. We toured like that for a while. And then after a while, for a few reasons, some economic, some artistic, we ended up pretty much paring down to the trio that you heard with just bass guitar and Jen singing.
There's also a guitarist, I believe, involved in some of the recordings. What's his name?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you played. I was listening a little at the beginning. You played the Bruce Springsteen tune, and Lizzie Ellman is a guitarist who recorded with us and who plays gigs with us from time to time.
So that was the acoustic guitar.
Yeah, Liberty played acoustic, and I did the kind of grungy.
Good. I'm glad you covered that, because I was embarrassed that I didn't have his name in front of me. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. No, Liberty's great. And as a matter of fact, the genesis of having that group back up, Jen, was that Liberty and Stefan and I are involved in a trio playing Stefan's music called Rosetta Trio.
Ah, that's where the Rosetta comes from. Okay.
Exactly. So we have one CD that we did a few years ago, and actually just last week we recorded the next one.
Oh wow!
At the home studio at their apartment in Brooklyn.
I see.
Which is where we did the Lie to Mine CD as well. So it's pretty comfortable. You're actually in their house, and you know there's not the kind of time constraints and
I think atmosphere
that
makes
you get you know in the regular studio.
Yeah.
So we just finished doing that, and we had a gig the other night that was really fun, playing Stefan's music, which is very, very interesting, kind of chamber jazz. It's jazz, but it's not. There's you're never going to find a swing beat in there, except for maybe a few seconds here and there.
So he writes music for all the instruments, or just primarily for his?
Well, it's the trio, so it's
just
written with this formation in mind.
I understand.
And it's just there's a lot of classical influence, I would say, and just every piece is kind of its own world and has its own mood and so forth. And
let me interrupt you for a second. I want to mention to the folks listening how they can obtain your recordings. So, would you give us do you have a website or some kind of a connection by which
they
met up with you?
Yeah, well, I do have a website. It's called jamiefoxguitar.com, because Jamie Fox was taken. And it's Jamie Fox, J-A-M-I-E-F-O-X, guitar, one X, unlike the other fellow who uses that name.
Yes, the, that funny fellow.
Yeah, and it's not his real name, by the way.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Like a, you know.
But this is your real name.
It is my real name. So
there we go.
Jen's in the habit of saying the real Jamie Foxx.
Yes, you're in. So you're listening to the real one, folks.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have a website, and there's links on there, but also on cdbaby.com, which is a great site for independent music. You can also get the CD there. And or download it. You know, these days people aren't so much into the physical CDs, although as I speak now, I'm looking at my 2,000 LPs that are in my apartment here. So, you know, I'm kind of, I like to have a physical object.
Yeah, I'm still that way myself.
Yeah, it's like to sort of hold and look at and
ponder. Oh, you can get a stereo set where you can put 20 of them in now and they'll just rotate for you. So, you know, why not have the physical thing?
Yeah, I don't really do that, but
well, not with the LPs.
Well, no, I'm thinking. I was thinking more CDs. Sorry.
CDs. Yeah.
Yeah, they have multi changers, but yeah. I have to say, I think the quality of the players are not yeah. as good as.
Yeah.
But that's a technical detail.
Indeed.
So anyway, you can certainly either download or get the physical CD, you know, through CD Baby.
Good. Yeah, I wanted to make sure we got that information out there.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah.
And then, of course, there's always, in case anybody's forgotten and just wants to find out from me, you can go to my website, which is claudioarts.com.
Mm-hmm. Geez, I wonder if you'd want to play another tune from the CD.
We could, now, if you had, the only thing is that if we do that, that puts you on hold on the telephone.
Well, I don't mind.
All right.
Actually.
No, however you want to do it.
Why don't you pick one for us and we'll play it?
Jamie could comment even
or actually
while
what we could do,
playing
yeah,
if
we,
he wants to. I mean,
how do you feel about that?
Sure.
Well,
yeah.
Us speaking you over your music, so we'll have it on and we'll still go on.
Okay.
What right. cut would you like to play, Jamie?
Well, I'm thinking of one that's maybe a little bit briefer. You could play the song called Childhood.
Childhood,
that.
Yeah. I think that's the only shorter one on the album.
What cut is that?
Cut 8.
Yeah, it's towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And what inspired that particular piece, by the way? Childhood, obviously.
Well, I think the title came after writing the music, but it just was very evocative for me of a certain kind of a bittersweet, emotional kind of feeling that I got from the music. So sort of, you know, just the positive and the not so positive parts of being a child and growing up, and, you know, realizing later on in life just like what the difficulties were more than I did at the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think a lot of adults go through that and sort of looking back go, oh yeah, that happened. That wasn't so easy, and that wasn't so easy. So it's just kind of evoked that mood for me.
It certainly has a playful vibe to it, and so here we go. I think we're about to put it on.
Okay.
And you can just comment as we go if you feel like saying anything, and that way we'll let the folks hear a bit of the music.
Sure. I don't want to talk too much over it, but...
I agree.
Let it go for a little bit.
And to everybody out there in Radioland, that was Jamie Foxx on his album When I Get Home. The piece you just heard was entitled Childhood. That was a cool piece, man. I liked it. Actually, a wonderful piece for DJs to work with, because you had a few areas there, I think three or four, where we could have easily made an exit and then come right back on after a little commentary.
Yeah, there's some pauses, you know, that happened. Yeah.
John Paul had...
Yeah, it was nice.
You had
nice.
An impression that I thought was kind of interesting.
Well, it
kind
of reminded me of the Schumann piano piece that I played when I was in college, Scenes of Childhood.
Oh, wow. That's
interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Must have picked up a lab somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know that piece, but I should check it out.
That actually made me think of something I would imagine to sort of be part of your trio, Rosetta Stone. It sounds like that kind of jamming.
Yeah, I mean, the Rosetta is definitely Stefan's, you know, project and music.
Yes, I understand.
And so forth, which has a different kind of bent, but certainly is related.
Yeah, just the collaboration. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, it's the chemistry that really counts, you know, in terms of this kind of music where so much improvisation. I'm sure John Paul and his experience would agree, if you're interested in improvising, at some point it takes you in a jazz direction.
Yeah.
But at least, you know, to some degree.
That's right.
Yeah. Sure, so it's the, you know, it's the interaction and the empathy and the chemistry among the musicians, which I think, you know, we have in Jen's group as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it all very interesting and gratifying.
I agree. Certainly, among artists in general, I think whoever you share the stage with, if there's a spark between you to begin with, it all works out so much better.
Yeah. It's just the human connection that becomes really important through that kind of activity.
Indeed. So that particular piece was inspired, as you said, by sort of a mix of childhood and nostalgia.
Yeah. That's just what it. As I said, I didn't start out with that in mind, and I would say in the pieces that I have written, you know, because they are instrumental, they're not saying anything in literal words.
Yes.
So it's a little bit, I think most of the time, in fact all the time, it's after the fact that I come up with a title. You think, well, I have to call this thing something.
Yeah.
So usually at some point something comes up that relates, you know, in some deeper way to what the piece is, besides just, okay, here's song X or
Y or Z. Yeah. I've rarely ever started writing a piece with a title in mind.
And I, on the other hand, I'm the opposite of that. I'll start with a title and then may find that the title doesn't really suit the piece.
Well, it could be a way to get into something, too. And then, you know.
Yeah.
I think part of the nature of creative work is it's malleable, so you might find, okay, that didn't really work, but this does.
When you're writing poetry, I think you're much more inclined to have some sort of congealed thought.
Or metaphor or something,
you know,
in your mind.
That has a title to it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with music, you know, as you start doing something creative in music, you don't necessarily think that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you might have the equivalent of the thought, but it's sound.
But it's a little musical phrase instead of a verbal phrase.
Yeah, it's not words. It's like music is quite an amazing form, you know. Actually, I just got this, Jen gave me this book that seems pretty interesting by Oliver Sacks,
mm-hmm.
called Musicophilia, Tales of Music and the Brain. And I just started reading it. The first page or two, and it just was very interesting in ways talking about music and how important it's been to our species forever, but in a certain sense how useless it is. There's nothing practical about it, but it seems to be an essential part of humans. You know,
we just need a lot of calming down.
Yeah. We need a lot of everything.
Yeah, exactly. Or going crazy, for that matter.
Yeah.
It's certainly a delightful piece. Any other particular pieces on there that you feel strongly about? I mean,
I mean, all of them, really. It actually took me quite a while to get around to making the CD, so all the pieces, some of them were older pieces and some were fairly recent to that recording, which I believe was like, been a while now, like 2004. So they all are, you know, pretty meaningful.
Mm-hmm. How many albums do you have out right now?
Well, that's just the only one under my own name
right
now.
Okay.
Yeah, Yeah, so...
Well, we've caught you at the dawning of your solo career then.
That's right.
Yeah, well, I hope there's a little more extension to the dawn.
Let's hope.
No, I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
No, so you're saying some of these...
Nowadays, I mean, as you both know, there's no large-scale financial support for this kind of music, so you really have to do it yourself, and you have to finance it yourself, and...
Yeah, do you do home concerts and stuff? That's a kind of a big trend.
I know Jen was telling us
house concerts.
With Jen, we've done quite a few house concerts, which is actually really great. We love doing those.
Those are fun.
Usually, it's so-called acoustic. Of course, I'm always playing electric guitar, but we'll do it without a sound system, and the bass will be acoustic, so the whole dynamic range has to come down, and
so you're saying that you get no vocal sound reinforcement.
Exactly.
That's a tough situation.
That's quite daring, actually.
Yeah, you have to really play with each other extremely well to make that.
And I imagine there are times you run into some pretty strange acoustics.
Well, most of the time it's fine. You know, it's people's living room, and if it's really heavily carpeted or something, that could make it tougher.
Yeah.
But it's just the intimacy of the setting is really great, and people are right there, and you know that they're there for music, not necessarily drinking and hanging out.
Right.
Which I have nothing against.
Yes.
No, but, that's not a problem.
yeah, it's a really nice environment. I haven't done that myself, and I know there are some jazz contexts for that, maybe not as many as for the singer-songwriter kind of thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But it's definitely a nice trend, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun doing that. Of course, some of the drawbacks are, like, you know, when you eat too many of the hors d'oeuvres and you start, you know, burping in the middle of your...
harder for singers.
It's a minor problem for a guitar player.
I imagine the vocalist would want to stay away from that.
Yeah, you know, I think Jen is pretty funny because she used to be pretty careful about that. And at a certain point, she just said, hey, forget it. If I'm hungry, I'm going to eat. I don't care. I'll deal with it.
It's real life.
Just don't do a Mama Cass.
No. She's pretty fearless that way.
No, I'm sure. Yeah. She seems pretty fearless all the way around. I think she's quite brave on stage.
Oh, she's quite an exceptional.
I like her choreography as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's great. She just had a birthday party, actually, on Sunday.
Oh, please wish a happy birthday from me.
Yeah, I will. Yeah,
happy
will.
Birthday, Jen.
Nice time.
Indeed. Yeah. So where in Brooklyn are you at this point? I know you. I don't think you're in Brooklyn Heights. You're further down the road.
No, it's a neighborhood called Windsor Terrace.
Okay.
It's basically around the corner from Park Slope, which is probably a better-known neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's near Prospect Park.
Okay, that bar rings a bell with me, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Windsor?
Windsor Park.
Windsor Park?
Windsor Terrace.
Windsor Terrace.
Yeah, yeah. I lived for many years in Upper Manhattan in Washington Heights, which up near the Cloisters Museum, which is the Metropolitan Museum of branch of medieval art,
mm-hmm.
which is quite a beautiful building and a great park, and it was a nice place to live, although it was a little bit far from where most things were happening. But you know, I have, just as a guitar player, you have to take amplifiers around, things like that. So I've always had a car in New York,
mm-hmm.
and parking there was just a nightmare.
Yeah.
And in my new neighborhood, and this becomes an obsession for people in New York with cars, my new neighborhood is actually really easy to park in.
That's amazing.
Which is an unbelievable, you know, thing for me, so that's nice.
I found out about that ahead of time and actually left my car in my dad's backyard when I went to New York for a year.
Well, you know what? If I didn't have to have one, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to get around on the subway and so forth that,
and
It's
funny, some of the messages you'll see inside the windshield, but there's no need to break into this car. Everything's already been stolen.
Yeah. You know, when I moved here, I was terrified of all that stuff. And in fact, on the advice of certain people, before we even got to New York, we were a little bit out of town, and we bought a chain to chain the hood shut because people would steal batteries.
My goodness.
You know, so I had a chain with a lock, so to open the hood, you had to have the key to this thing. And, you know, once we moved here, oh, the windshield wipers were stolen, the little coverings of the blinker lights and so forth. But that was like 95, 96. That's not to say things don't happen now, but it's much less so than then. So
that's good to hear.
I no longer chain my hood. And, you know, you maybe once every 4 or 5 years the window gets smashed or, you know, but that's about it.
So yeah. a bit of the flavor is still there.
2 months ago, my window got smashed on my street in Chapel Hill 2 months ago.
Yeah, well, there you go.
That kind of stuff happens everywhere.
Yeah.
I live too far in the woods. They leave me alone.
Yeah.
That's the good fortune. They figure I'm that mean bastard in the woods you don't want to come mess with.
Well, that's after you kill 2 or 3 people. And that's the, it. You know, so
just get a reputation people, and let
yeah,
it live,
get a
whether
reputation,
it's true or not.
Nobody, yeah.
Exactly.
Hey, I want to let you know. Let us know the next time you come to town and John Paul and I will buy the first round.
Well, that sounds
I'm assuming
great.
You guys are going to make North Carolina an annual thing. So.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, we've played down there quite a bit and really, really enjoy, you know, every time we get a chance to go down there. So,
and I think, from what I could tell, you know, the more you show up, I think the more you're going to build that audience because you had a bit of a loyal following in the folks that were there.
Well, the next time you come, if you happen to be coming when you could be here on a Tuesday morning,
we could do a live thing.
Do a live thing right here on the radio.
Well, that would be great. Yeah. We've done that here and there over the years. That's always a lot of fun.
Let you folks out there know this is Jamie Foxx that we have on telephone calling us from Brooklyn. He's promoting his new album, When I Get Home. And also, Jamie, why don't you give us that website one more time?
JamieFoxxGuitar.com. JamieFoxx and guitar.
And there you have it. Is there one you'd like to select for us that we can play on your behalf on the way out? I think we're coming to a wrap.
Yeah.
I thought we might exit with one of your tunes. You go ahead and pick it.
Type.
Yeah, maybe I'm thinking When I Get Home might be good. That's one of the... There's two songs on the CD that I played acoustic guitar on.
Oh, wonderful.
Although I also did overdub some electric on that. And it's kind of... a little more in the country direction, I think, and also basically my music comes from enjoying, you know, so many sources of inspiration. So one of my favorite groups of all time is The Band. And to me it's a little evocative of The Band, sort of at the end a little evocative of The Grateful Dead, who
all
I used
right.
to really, you know, like a lot when I was in San Francisco.
Who seemed to have been passed over to Jimmy Buffett at this point.
Yeah.
The Parrot Heads.
But anyway, so When I Get Home, that's probably a good one, I think. Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, listen, thank you for being on and consider yourself a part of the Speakeasy family. I'm sure we'll talk again.
Well, thank you so much to both of you, John Paul and Claudio. I really appreciate the opportunity.
It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks a lot, Jamie. Okay.
All right. Take care.
Talk soon. Cheers.
See you later. Bye-bye.
And shall we just go ahead and play this, Scott, now?
And this is When I Get Home by Jamie Foxx as we exit the Speakeasy.